Okay, we are up to the Chacham Tzvi, part two. So we have to go and clarify a few things from last week, and just recap a little. Who was the Chacham Tzvi? His name was Rav Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi. Rav Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi was an Einikol through marriage, a grandson of the Sha'ar Ephraim. Sha'ar Ephraim was a counterpart of the Shach. Yeah, Sha'ar Ephraim was one of that whole crew. They have a whole crew. Can you move over one seat? If you could, amazing. So, that whole crew, we're good. So, that whole crew of that Tekufa, he was actually the chief Rav in Boyden. Boyden was Buda. There were people occupying Budapest in the 1600s. The Sha'ar Ephraim was there, and his great-grandfather, one of his great-grandfathers, was Rabbi Elio Baal Shem. Okay? There were a few Baal Shems in history. Okay? Multiple Baal Shems. The Baal Shem of Rabbi Yisrael, Baal Shem Tov from Mezhebish. There was the Baal Shem of Michelstadt. That's German. Michelstadt. And then there's Rabbi Elio Baal Shem. And there's very cool stories. This is another bedtime story about a goylam that he made that kept growing. He couldn't stop it. He didn't know what to do. And no one ever heard the story, so I never heard the story either. Last time I spoke about the Chacham Tzvi, about 4 months ago, one of the guys in the shul says, "Rabbi, you know the story about the goylam?" I said, "That's not Almi Prague, wrong guy." And he's like, "No, you don't know the story. It's something with the Chacham Tzvi's grandfather." And they actually bring it down. Story with he made a goylam, and the goylam kept growing. And he was so nervous that it would take over the world because he didn't know how to stop it. He had a Shem Hashem, and he put it into his forehead. Again, this is bedtime stories. Wild stories. You cannot make this stuff up, so it's got to be somewhat true. Yeah? And they went, and he was so nervous. Rabbi Elio Baal Shem ran up to the Goylam and ripped off the Shem Hashem off of his forehead. And in the midst, he got hurt, and he ceased to exist. Baruch Hashem, everyone's safe. So, the Chacham Tzvi, or Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi, married the Sha'ar Ephraim's granddaughter. And he was a great-grandson of Rabbi Elio Baal Shem. Okay, now we know a little bit backwards.
Or himself?
What? I believe it's from his mother. Yeah, I guess Sha'ar Ephraim. That way, right? So, we said last week a wild story that happened. And I'm just going to clarify, a few of the details were off. Because I finally found it. This is the show and tell that we had last week. This is the autobiography of the Yaivitz. The Yaivitz, or Yaakov Emden, is the son. Yeah? We rarely have fathers and sons by the shear, so you get a special shout out. Yeah? Special shout out to fathers and sons. He's the son. So, Chacham Tzvi, Rabbi Yaakov Emden. We'll play it. We'll play a roll call, role play. So, this is the son's autobiography, and he has a bunch of chapters on his father. Start writing now. Feel? Okay. He has a bunch of chapters on his father, and he goes through a bunch of different stuff, and he tells over the story that happened with his father. His father's name was, can you guess? Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi's father's name was? Take a guess. What? If his son was Yaakov, his father's name was? Yaakov. Okay, great. We got it. So, his father's name was Yaakov, who was the son-in-law, if anyone's follow, of the Sha'ar Ephraim. So, Rav Yaakov was, he was living through Tach V'Tad when Khmelnytsky, the evil Ukrainian, which, as we mentioned, Ukrainians have a long history spanning many facets. Yeah, that was politically correct. So, Khmelnytsky goes and they start killing all Jews they can. 2 million Jews are killed through Tach V'Tat, those years, Tav Ches and Tav Tes. And Yaakov is found kneeling in front of a Cossack. And the Cossack has the knife, has the sword on his neck. Today's going to be just wild stories, okay? This is wild story number one. He has the knife on his neck. This story comes to you from Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I'll show you where he writes it, step by step. And the Cossack has the sword on his neck. He's about to go and kill him. There are two Edim watching, and he's saying, "Vidui." It's over. The Edim leave. The Cossack looks at how young this guy is, and decides, takes the butt of the sword, smashes it into his back, and says, get out of here. I don't want to see you. Calls him a bunch of names, a dog, and this and that. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin records every name he was called. You love that, right? Every detail matters. And he goes, and he survives. Two Edom come to the Rebbe of Heschel. Reb Heschel of Krakow. The Chanukah Satira. That's the only sefer we have of his. The Rebbe of the Shach. Okay? The Rebbe of Heschel, they bring an Aguna Shaila. Is the husband alive? The wife wants to know, did my husband die? It was a war. People died right, left, and center. So if your wife, if your husband dies, chas v'shalom, so you can get remarried. If he's alive, you just don't know where he is. No cell phones, no nothing. So you can't get remarried. That's what an aguna is. An aguna is someone who's stuck. This woman is stuck. She doesn't know if he's alive. So there's lots of halachic discussion about when we know for sure. The Rebbe of Heschel goes in Paskins that we have two Edim seeing him being murdered. She can get remarried. And he writes, this woman, she couldn't. She couldn't bring herself emotionally. And 2 years later, Rabbi Yaakov, my grandfather, writes the Yaivitz. Walks in, walks through the door, and she had not gotten remarried. And the Rebbe of Heschel, therefore, didn't paskin on Aguna Shaivitz. What? The Rebbe of Heschel, that's what it says over here. The Rebbe of Heschel, from then onward, did not want, because he saw that, you know, Ein Takala Ba Lebehenton Shel Tzadikim, right? And the special Siyata Shmaya, he felt that if he, such a thing could even happen to him, he shouldn't be passing on such Shilas any longer. One Shaila. That was one story with the Chacham Tzvi. So Rabbi Yaakov and his wife continued with the Chacham Tzvi's father. They continued to be married. Baruch Hashem, they lived happily ever after, and they had a child, and they named him Tzvi.
He was born after.
Yeah. He was born in Tuf Yud Ches.
It's easy, man. 1658, because 10 years after.
Very good. 1658. Tuf Yud Ches, 1658, because Tach is 1648. So Tuf Yud Ches is 1658. So that was 10 years later. They had already been reunited, and he's born. Okay? He was not born in Vilna, like I said 2 weeks ago.
Did the Chacham Tzvi also have the reservation of Aguna Shailas?
So that's what I recall. I don't see it over here. Okay. That's what I mentioned last time. That's what I thought. But I don't see it over here. We'll find out. Where is it? Okay, next. So he's born in Meron. Where's Meron? So I thought it was in Vilna. He wasn't born in Vilna. He was born in Meron. Meron is not that's the middle of the bone. You suck out the Meron, right? The marrow. That's Yiddish for marrow. Meron was a region. It was Czechoslovakia. It was Prague. Prague was in Meron. Bohemia and Meron are synonymous, if I'm not mistaken. Anyone wants to check their 17th century history? Get back to me, okay? So he's born there, and his grandfather was very involved with his upbringing, which was the way it used to work. You know, when your grandfather's a Shaar Ephraim, you don't stray too far. And his grandfather at 15 sent him to learn by the Chachmei HaSvardim, which is fascinating. He sent him to learn by, he calls him Rebbe Elio Kubo. Rebbe Elio Kubo was in Salonika in Greece. So this Bacher from Czechoslovakia, Prague, was sent to Svardi land. And they were so taken by him. And supposedly he was given smicha from the chief of the Svardim, who were then located in Turkey, in Kushta,
Constantinople.
Thank you. That place, Kushta. And that's arguably, no one knows where the name Chacham came from, because he was Ashkenazi, but he definitely was widely respected by the Svardim. Eventually, what I said last week, which is also true, is eventually he became the Rav in Amsterdam, which had a Svardi Gehila. That's where Tshuva's Chacham Tzvi was printed, in Tuf Ayin Gimel, 5 years before he was Nifter. So, very likely, that's when he decided, or that's when it was cemented, what his name will be. But that's Chacham Tzvi, who was Ashkenazi, through and through. He spent most of his life in Germany. After he came back from Svardi, his Svardi travels, he was the Rav in the Gimel Kehilas, as we mentioned, Aleph, Hey, Vav, the three prestigious kahilas of Germany, which were Altona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. They're always grouped together, as we mentioned, and you'll see it time and time again. Which also, everyone, tell a friend, we're starting Shabtai Tzvi, Yemach Shemoy, next week. Buckle up, okay? As those have mentioned, bring your popcorn. So this is foreshadowing. If anyone knows part of this machloikas, we're only doing Shabtai Tzvi to properly understand the backdrop. To properly understand the backdrop, what was going on between Yaakov Endo and Yonatan Eipschitz, because it was all revolving around Shabtai Tzvi and Sabbateanism and all those type of things. The whole showdown took place in Altona. Because Yaakov Endo was living in the town, and his father was the Rav, the previous Rav, and the Rav of Altona was Reb Yonatan Eipschitz. It's not going to help anything, right? It's not going to help anything. He was the Rav in Emden, and then he moved to Altona, part of the Gimel Kehilas, and fine. The Chacham Tzvi moves to the Gimel Kehilas. We're not going to have time for that much. And he goes and he opens up a yeshiva in the Kloiz. The Kloiz was like the modern-day pre-yeshiva concept. That was where everyone gathered in this big building, the shul, and everyone learned, and he was heading the shul. And he married a woman while he was in Hungary, by his grandfather, Shai Ephraim, and unfortunately from war, she died, and his only daughter died. They were killed from cannon, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden. This is the coolest part about all these stories. It's from a grandson. It's not that far. Most of these stories he heard from his father, so it's not that far away. So, he was killed, he gets remarried in Germany, to one of the Rav. It was he decided that one was a very, very wealthy man from Budapest, and he decided that his next shidduch he wanted to go for Gichus. Yeah, and he married his distant cousin. Rebecca Remden says it was like a second cousin, Rev Neimark, who was the Rav of the Gimel Kehilas. And he opened up the Kloiz, unofficial Rosh Hashiva. You have Naimuk's, thank you. That was self-understood. Yeah, Rav Naimuk's daughter, and he eventually takes over the Rabbanus in Aleph Hey Vav, in the Gimel Kehilas of Altona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. One other cool story, crazy story rather. The Chacham Tzvi was not afraid of anybody, which his son definitely Yarshin. And if he didn't like something and he felt something was off, he would fight against it to the end with no reservation. So there's a story. If anyone's familiar with the Heter of Meir Rabbanim, anyone ever heard of the concept? Heter Meir Rabbanim. So it's happened not so long ago. For any yeshivish guys, we all know Heter Meir Rabbanim happened just about 30 years ago. Here in America, there was a Heter Meir Rabbanim. It enables someone, there's a Cheirim de Rabbeinu Gershom, you shouldn't have two wives simultaneously. Let's say a crazy circumstance where she went crazy and he wants to remarry and he's stuck. She won't take a get, but he's going to be stuck forever. If 100 Rabbanim sign that he's allowed to remarry, 100, then you're allowed to marry a second wife, and that's, so to say, a clause within the Cheirim de Rabbeinu Gershom. So there was a very, very wealthy man, writes Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who went and decided he wanted to apply that heter for a shnia derabanan, a type of arayis. You know, a mother-in-law is what's a shnia. Give me a classic shnia. For all those who know Yevamis, count on you, Rabbi Klein. I always get confused with Yevamis, with, you know, what's a shnia. It's not one of the direct, right? It's not a blood relative. It's a sister-in-law's daughter, right? My mother-in-law's
grandmother.
It's a derabanan arayis. So this wealthy, wealthy man decided, I want to marry this woman. His name was Madel, which is a Yiddish name of a girl's Yiddish name. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, this is the coolest part, he writes his name. His name is Madel. And this Madel, he wanted to go, was extremely fabulously wealthy, he wanted to get Meir Rabbanim. And he decided he's going to acquire Meir Rabbanim to sign on his behalf so he can marry this woman. And he goes, and they're all signing, and he comes to the Chacham Tzvi, and the Yavitz writes, some of them he got the Kesef Malay, some of them he got because he was very influential, and he comes to my father. I'll just write you, I'll read you the words, because you can't make these stuff up. You can't make this stuff up. And he comes to his father, and his father goes and hears out what he wants to do. And his father goes and says, what happened? His father goes and says, I will not partake in this at all. And he screams at him, and he spits in his face. For even entertaining that you want me to partake in your averus. He definitely was not a very idle. He felt it was wrong, and he screamed at him. Rabbi Yaakov Emden finishes off the story. He says he got his 100 signatures, and he attempted to marry this woman, and he got so sick. Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that he had some ailment, that his body started to fall apart. That's the wording he used. And his insides started to exit his body, and he died a terrible death before he could even get married to this woman. And it was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem not to go against Divrei Rabbanim, not to go against the Issa D'Rabbanan. Yeah, it's a wild story. Again, then you turn to your son and you say, good night, Shefala, right? Sleep well, if he could after this one. So, then he goes to Amsterdam. He's brought in to Amsterdam to be the Rav. And again, he's going and fighting L'shem Klal Yisrael. Because there's a sefer that comes out, Divrei Nechemya. We're going to come back to this when we learn about Shabtai Tzvi next week. Spread the word, next week. When you learn about Shabtai Tzvi, Divrei Nechemya, the guy's name was Nechemya Chiyun. Ches Yud Vav Nun Seifis. Nechemya Chiyun. He was a terrible Rasha. But they were very, very sly, and he was able to mask any Divrei Doifi, that's what it's referred to, Kfira and blasphemy. He was able to mask it within nice Divrei Torah. And you have to be very, very well-knowledged, very, very well-rounded to be able to discern what's really behind the words. So the Chacham Tzvi gets the Sefer, and everyone loved the Chacham Tzvi, but this one brought him down. And he ended up leaving Amsterdam over this Sefer. Because he came out against it, because he said this guy is a Shabtai Tzvi guy, no one should learn it. The problem was he got many, many haskamas from Chashav Rabbanim. So the Chacham Tzvi is between a rock and a hard place. He's going to come out against it. He's going to make every other Rav look so bad that they couldn't even discern Shabtai Tzvi Kfira. And he did it anyway. He went after the chief Chacham of the Sfardim of Amsterdam, and all of his loyalists turned on him, and he ended up leaving. Both. No one knew who the author really was, but the content, no one really realized. He realized and sniffed him out and got rid of him. He ended up getting another position. He was in probably seven different towns over his career. And he ended up becoming a Rav in Lviv, which was one of the biggest kehilas in Ukraine, one of the biggest kehilas of the time. And he dies in Tuf Ayin Ches, that is 60 years. Not such a long life. But the best part is, you know, when he dies, what happens? Kehilas in Germany make a Yom Evil because the Gadol Hadar dies. The chief rabbi of the Sfardim in Amsterdam, who was essentially responsible for getting him ousted because he was the one he took down, and therefore Chacham Tzvi lost his loyalists, says, I made a mistake. He was right. Nechemya Chiyun was a Sabbatian, closet Sabbatian. And I want to ask Mechila, beg Mechila. In London, there was a famous story with David. It's not famous, actually. There was a story with Reb David Neto, who said some blasphemous thing, and they wanted to fire him, or disfired him, and they took a liking to Chacham Tzvi. They all sent him. They want Chacham Tzvi to be their Rav. Many Sfardi kehilas, actually. He was so sought after by Sfardim, and they offered him all the money in the world, and he said, no, I want my children to grow up as Ashkenazim, because that's our Messiah. So I'm going to pass up all the money in the world so that our Messiah could be upheld. And in London, after he dies, something odd. They took out an empty urn, covered it in black, and they all sat on the floor and wailed and mourned over the Chacham Tzvi's death. Arguably the Gadol Hadar, who definitely made his mark, fought for what he thought, did not hesitate to do exactly what he thought at any expense. And that was the Chacham Tzvi. Definitely what to learn. Definitely what to learn. We have his tshuvas. Tshuvas Chacham Tzvi. Not much else. Just tshuvas. And the lesson to be is that if you believe in something, do it. That's definitely one thing to take out of the Chacham Tzvi. Okay? To be...